Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Okay, and we are back with another episode of the DFL Swimming Podcast. Thanks for tuning back in. We are back at it again today with the promised and much anticipated analysis of the best women's teams in NCAA history. Dez, how's it going over on your side of things?
Not too bad. Still back at home. Things are going well here. Ready to talk? Well, there's some really good women's teams that we're covering here. Really excited to get into it, get talking about it.
For sure. Yeah, it'll be a good discussion. Big news from the swimming community beyond the NCAA. Potential for the return of the ISL or International Swim League was announced yesterday. There was some chatter, I think, a couple months back. ISL had gotten active back on social media, I believe, and that got some people excited about what is this about. The league had folded, I guess, to give a little context, back in 2021, I believe. I believe there were three or four seasons that were done in the International Swim League. And I would say with some moderate success, there were some things that kind of led to the fold, both funding, the conflicts, COVID, conflict over in Russia, Ukraine, and COVID all kind of, I think, contributed to the folding of the ISL back in 21. But I think it's be pretty cool if it came back. What do you think about this, Dez?
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see. We've seen the CSL, we've seen ISL. You know, there's a lot of different avenues of potential revenue makers for swimmers right now that are kind of coming back out over this past year, which is really cool to see, considering it's not a sport where it's very revenue generating specifically for our professional athletes. So just another opportunity. One, you know, obviously a lot of questions. We don't have much information on it right now. I also know there's a lot of issues with the ISL when they folded, where there are a lot of athletes that did not get paid and did not get their money. So are you going to pay your athletes before we start the league back up? Not so sure, but there's a lot of questions to still be answered, but it'd be really cool to see this league back up and running for sure.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, the funding issue is always a big question, and swimming is a sport where, as of right now, there has not been a model that has been proven to be generating revenue in the green. It's usually, you could argue, it's more of a goodwill donation towards the love of the game, where you have people backing the ISL or CSL. And as of right now, it's yet to be seen to if there's a way to create a format that is profitable and marketable in a way that we only see probably in the Olympics every 4 years as of right now. So at the end of the day, though, I still think it's important to give it a shot. And when you have people who support the sport in this way, willing to put millions of dollars on the table, I think you got to take it and see what you can do with it. So
definitely,
that's my piece. With that, I don't think there's any other breaking news from the NCAA necessarily to cover. I think we can mainly just focus here on this discussion of the NCAA women's teams that we pulled for today. So I think important that we briefly go over kind of the criteria that we had for selecting these teams. I think we discussed this a little bit in the previous episode when the men's side, but Dez, do you want to run us through that a little bit?
Yeah. So we didn't really look at overall points scored. We obviously looked at the winners of NCAA meets. We looked at A finalists, how many they had of A finalists, how many B finalists, how many winners, and how many records they scored throughout the meet, and then records throughout the year as well. One of the things we didn't really look at, obviously, was times. We have some teams from the early 2000s, some teams from, you know, as late as 2025. So not necessarily going to be the same speed, and you're going to be a lot faster more recently just because of swimflation. And we did not really look at the total overall scoring, but we have a lot of names here, a lot of A finalists, a lot of records. Let's get into it there, Casey Stowe.
Far away, yeah. And we even got another short course meters NC is that we get to cover today again. So let's get into it. I think we have, I believe, five meets that we're going to look into today, starting with Auburn 2004. So right off the bat, the short course meters meet that was held in 2004 on the Olympic year. It's actually coincidental that we had Auburn winning on both the men's and women's side this year. And so that 2004 Auburn team was actually my pick on the men's side as the best NCAA team ever assembled for the men's side. Mm-hmm. I'm standing by that. 31 A finals, absolutely ridiculous performance. And I think now we got to consider, what was Auburn doing in this year that allowed them to absolutely dominate both meets? Because I'm just going to go run through their stats from this meet in 2004 as well. On the women's side, 29 A finals, 10 B finals, 3 winners, and 3 records. Now, asterisks again on the records, because this was short course meters. There had only been one other short course meters NCAA meet ever hosted before this meet. So records probably aren't as meaningful in this situation. But I'm right drawn back to 29 A finals on the women's side. Couldn't quite top the men of 31. Walk me through this one, Des.
Yeah, Auburn was an absolute powerhouse back in the day. Men's, women's, both sides. They were on something and they could swim. You'll notice for these first two teams we talk about, not as many winners and records as some of the later teams that we mentioned, but wow, is there depth. And that is what took Auburn to that national championship. You know, four, almost 550 freestylers in the A final, just absolutely cooking, just churning out A finalists, churning out B finalists. And that is what got them the dub. And that was how they dominated wasn't really winning events, but it was, you can get a lot of girls in that A final, you can put up a lot of points.
Yeah, I was running through these results. I think in both the 50 and the 100 meter freestyles, Auburn put up 4 in the A final and 1 in the B final. And the 1 in the B final was ninth out of freedom. So almost 5 in the A final in both from freestyles. And I didn't mention it in the previous episode, that was basically the same trend that you saw on the men's team as well. The depth in the sprint freestyles was absolutely ridiculous. And really, I mean, that's of their basically 30 A finals, 8 of that, or a third of them practically, are coming from the sprint freestyles, which is ridiculous. So again, just the sheer number of A finals that this team was able to produce is ridiculous. And so when you look at some of the names here, Margaret Holzer, Kirsty Coventry, Christina Swindle, Heather Kemp, and Becky Short, Kirsty Coventry, still extremely relevant in the sport of swimming, actually. 2025 was announced president of the IOC, or International Olympic Committee. Mm-hmm. International from Zimbabwe, actually, or competed internationally for Zimbabwe. Stellar international career as well as NCAA here at Auburn. Margaret Holzer, another Olympian, I think in 2000, but a star-studded team here that just produced a ridiculous NCAAs.
Yeah, and they were churning out NCAA titles. They were going back and forth with a couple of teams. Early 2000s was the Auburn era in swimming.
Yeah, no doubt. And that leads us straight into our second team here, which was the 2005 Georgia team. And they were certainly present in that 2004 results that we dove into. But I think what's really interesting is from 2004 to 2005, Auburn still put up about 100 points victory margin in that 2004 meet. And from 2004 to 2005, UGA basically completely flipped the script on Auburn and produced, I think, well over 100-point victory margin on Auburn in 2005. And with many of the same swimmers still being present in that 2005 meet, Kirsty Coventry, first front and center, still competing for Auburn. So what happened in that 2005 meet, Des?
Yeah, I don't know. Georgia just dominated. Again, another team that had a decent amount of wins. They had more wins than the Auburn team in 04. So they had 26 A finalists, 14 B finalists, 9 winners, and 4 records. And they put up 609 points. When you see an NCAA team win, you see usually between that 400 and 500 range. I have not seen many teams that have put up over 600 points, and this Georgia team did exactly that. Big names for them, Carlin Joyce, Amanda Weir, Amanda Arsenault, Mary DeCenza, Lindsay Erter, and Sarah Powell. Just very dominating. I said to Casey earlier, I don't know if they had an event limit or what, but I swear I saw Carlin Joyce and every single individual winning it. She was an absolute powerhouse. Another big name is obviously Amanda Weir. She was a freshman at the time, and she was a big-time swimmer. She won 2 silver medals in 04 and a bronze medal in the 2012 Summer Olympics, as well as the 2016 Summer Olympics. So she was on Team USA for a long, long time, and a name that a lot of people will probably recognize.
For sure, yeah.
Comes in that depth, like, just ridiculous.
It is pretty cool now to go back and look, and I'm not familiar with all of these names here from this roster. When you go through these lists of key names that we pulled, you go through and every single one is a one-time, two-time Olympian with medals and a just storied career, which is pretty cool to see that, one, this UGA team was able to assemble this kind of talent onto one roster, literally flip the script on an Auburn team that had been dominant the year prior and put up almost the exact same statistics in terms of performance statistics as the Auburn team before, and produce 6 more winners than Auburn was the year before. So I think that in terms of when you look at a team that comes back from kind of getting smoked in the 2004 and come back and win by even a larger margin and pick up more winners, I think that is a factor of dominance that needs to be considered.
It's pretty outstanding. And this is the second year in a row where the winning team put 4 girls in the A final in the 50 freestyle. Auburn did it in 04. Georgia did it in 05. That's half of the A final. Like, you're coming up with half the points from one event. Just domination on the sprint freestyle for UGA and Auburn the year prior.
It's almost like you have an amazing sprint free program, good things start to trickle down on the rest of the team.
Almost.
They cracked the code there back in 2004, 2005.
Definitely.
We're going to jump forward a little bit here in the timeline to get to our third team that we're going to discuss today, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Des, is the 2000, actually pause before we go to 2018 Stanford, we wanted to mention the 2014 Georgia, University of Georgia team that was also extremely dominant, producing 26 A finals, 10 B finals, 5 winners and 2 records. Certainly another ridiculous performance from Georgia, but we decided to stick with that 2005 performance. What were some of the names on that roster?
Olivia Smoliga, Melanie Margalis, Shannon Vreeland, Brady McLean, Amber McDermott, and Haley Flickener. And there were a lot of big names at this NCAA meet. You had Missy Franklin as well. And Leah Neal. You had just a plethora of names at this 2014 NCAAs. And the thing that I find most impressive is, you know, they only won 5 events, which is not many, but they also didn't win a single relay. I believe they placed 2nd in 1, maybe 2 of those relays, but they didn't win a single relay and they still came out on top by almost 100 points, which is not something you see. And that just goes to show the type of depth and speed that 2014 Georgia swim team had. Olivia Smoliga was a freshman at the time and she ended up coming out with a win in that 50 freestyle and having some really, really solid swims. But top to bottom, just talk about depth. And when you have a team that doesn't win any relays and can still win that meet, it's very, very impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this was a golden age for the Georgia women's team. 2nd in 2011, 2nd in 2012, 2nd or 1 in 2013, 1 in 2014, 2nd in 2015. And that 2014 year, 528 points is a pretty ridiculous performance with just the ridiculous names on the roster. So,
yeah. Moving on, 4 years after that, actually, a team that I'm sure people are familiar with is Stanford 2018. Have to give a shout to the 2017 team as well, but I think this 2018 team is just a little bit better. We have 25 A finalists, 11 B finalists. Here's the kicker: 13 event winners, 13 event winners, and then 4 records.
Hmm. Was there some star power on that team?
There was some star power on that team. You had names like Katie Dribbeau, Kayla Decky, Brooke Ford, Jeanette Hu, Ella Easton, and then honestly, like, their MVP of the meet was probably Simone Manuel. She was anchoring all the relays. She was winning individual events. Obviously, everyone's going to focus on Kayla Decky, and she had herself an insane meet. She swam really, really well in her events, but Simone was the one that was carrying those teams on those relays and winning individual events, putting down the 50, 100, and 200 free, and man, was that a star-studded team.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at just the dominance from the 50 to the mile in freestyle on that team with Ledecky and Simone Manuel. I mean, also just in that era, in the 2010s plus, this team holding probably the two most dominant women swimmers in the world, potentially, especially with Ledecky and Manuel in her moments, is ridiculous, and certainly is contributing to, I mean, what is that? They probably produced to 5 or 6 of those 10 wins that they had. I mean,
well, the year prior to that, Ledecky won in the 400 and the 800 at the Olympics. I don't think they had the mile yet. And then Simone, that 2016 year was the year that Simone won the 50 freestyle, and I believe the 100 as well. That was her peak year. So they had two girls who came in and were gold medalists in their respective events at the Olympics. Like, how do you compete with that?
Well, that was, I remember this was when we were still in high school. And I mean, this Stanford team held the same amount of hype that we saw in some of those early 2020 Virginia teams. It felt like an unstoppable force that you might as well not swim this. Might as well not swim the season. For Stanford's gonna win.
They ridiculous. That 2017 year also, again, I will say, is also pretty dominating. They had a 800 free relay record that stood for 8 years of 6:45. But just dominating head to toe, and they had a lot of good girls outside of Simone and outside of Katie. You know, Jeanette Hugh was a constant 21:50 freestyler. Allie Howe was really good. Lauren Pitzer was an amazing swimmer. But I remember, like, watching this Stanford team. My coach, like, got me out of practice, club practice, and we watched Simone anchor in 20 point. And at the time, I remember just being in awe watching a woman go 20 point in the 50 freestyle in a relay. Like, that was something we've never seen before. And she was just such a dominating sprinter for her time.
Yeah, definitely. Dez is still trying to get down to those times. So,
yeah,
just wait on it, folks.
We'll get there someday.
With that, I think we got to move into, I mean, I think debatably one of the best swimming dynasties probably ever at this point in time. And you could pick any number of these teams. Starting in 2021, 22, 23, 24, 25. Folks, your University of Virginia Cavaliers women's team, four NCAA titles in a row, 5 titles in a row.
No titles in a row.
Is a ridiculous dynasty that could be continued this year. But the challenge was, which one of these teams do we select?
Yeah, that was the issue, right? We didn't include 2021 in our rankings, but I'm just going to go through and mention every single year, and it really was hard. In terms of dynasty, like, they have been the most dominant across probably a 5-year period on any team, and they also go pound for pound almost with that 2018 Stanford team, which is just star-studded. In 2022, they had 23 A finalists, 10 B finalists, 10 winners, and 7 records. 2023, they had 24 A finalists, 8 B finalists, 11 winners, and 8 records. 2024, they had 24 A finalists, 7 B finalists, 11 winners again, and 6 records. And then 2025, 24 A finalists, 9 B finalists, 10 winners, and 6 records. So the most dominant on the fact of they had more records every single year than any other team we mentioned, and they had just as much, if not more, winners than any other team mentioned outside of that Stanford 2018 team. Just really dominant. And I think the year that we end up choosing is that 2023 year. It was Kate Douglas's last year in the NCAA. They had Gretchen, Alex Walsh, Lexi Como, Amy Canny's freshman year, Ella Nelson, Maxine Parker, Emma Wyant was still swimming for them. Just a plethora of names.
Yeah. And I think what's unique to me about this period of time in swimming is, just like you mentioned, a number of NCAA records that fell each consecutive year just emphasizes the proliferation of women's swimming to a whole new level that was really caused by, you know, the Walsh sisters, Kate Douglas, who not only took swimming to a new level in their early years of college, but then pushed the bar even higher each consecutive year.
Mm-hmm.
And they basically just rinse and repeat every single year. It was you put up 25, mid 20, 24 A finals every single year, you're probably going to win the meet. And why not? Why not get a few 6 NCAA records while you're at it?
And it's just reloading for them. It's reloading. I don't know how they do it. It's pretty cool to see. And I had to go back when I was searching through the results here. A lot of times their relay records, they would stack a relay for ACCs. And then they wouldn't stack. They'd break the NCAA record at ACCs, and then they would win it at NCAAs, but they wouldn't stack it. And it just like the amount of the thought process behind like you can stack and not stack relays and still win and still dominate. And they're just basically just like toying around with their food at that point. Like it's crazy.
That is one way to put it. Yeah, exactly. They could have had some fun with their NCAA lineups if they wanted to, and still that's what they did at ACC's. They would mix things around and get the job done there, and then they could put their A roster forward at NCAA. So
yeah, a swim I wanted to
mention. I mean, not only this women's team, but the star power in the rest of the NCAA at this time, yes, is also ridiculous when you're looking at Catherine Burkhoff, Olympian, Maggie McNeil, Olympian, Claire Curzan was still at Stanford at this time, eventually bringing her talents over to Virginia. But it was a tough time to be winning and setting records in this landscape of the NCAA, and they were doing it time and time again. So you have to give credit where credit's due to this team.
Yeah. The swim that I remember watching and just being just so eye-opening was when Kate Douglas went a 148.3 in the 200 IM. And that to me was like, I never thought I would see a girl get, you know, under 150. I was like, yeah, that'll happen. Under 149 by that much. I remember watching that and just being like jaw dropped. And just depth top to bottom. But at the end of the day, we got to choose one of these teams that we think is the best and most dominant all time. Who are we picking, Casey Still?
All right. Well, put me in a tough spot again, Des. I know you're going to want to go with UVA. And I want to disagree with you. I really do. I do. But I do believe that I still have to go with this last team that we discussed, which is the 2023 UVA women's team. I think top to bottom, it's when you look at the stats, the performance stats that we've pulled for these teams. I mean, 24 A finals, 11 winners, A records. I can't get past it in terms of, I just don't think any other team has come close. So it's UVA 2023 for me.
You know, I'm really torn. I am. This Stanford 2018 team, like 13 event winners, is pretty incredible. And it really is hard to top that. I do think that I would choose this 2023 Virginia team as well, but I do think it's a toss up. And I think it comes down to this 2023 team had a little bit more depth. they had just a little bit more name power on their team, right? I think that they had Stanford had, you know, 6 to 10 really, really solid girls and that were winning events, that were placing top 8. And I think when you look at this Virginia team, they had closer to 12 to 16 girls that were just throwing down on their NCAA team. And I think that's kind of where it comes down to, you know, who takes the win, who was kind of the better team. And I'm going to give it to the 2023 Virginia team as well.
Yeah, that's, I mean, fair enough. And I think you, as you see some of the, we know obviously the result of Katie Ledecky's career that continues on now, and Simone Manuel is even still lurking around on some making international teams and stuff like that. And I think it's interesting to see kind of how these rosters continue on after they're done in college. And by the time, you know, Gretchen Walsh is done, Kate Douglas, what are their careers going to have looked like?
Yeah.
And we'll be able to reflect on, oh, is this basically rinse and repeat the same kind of situation we saw now with this Stanford team that we can reflect on and say, oh, wow, these are, you know, two of the ultimate all-time greats. And some could argue they probably already are some of the all-time greats, yeah. But it'll just be interesting to see as we continue to watch their careers play out. So I think that's a pretty interesting one. Honestly, today I enjoyed this discussion because I think there are a lot of really dominant teams on this women's side that we could have picked. And so I would personally love to hear other people's opinions about some of the teams that we may have skipped over that should have been mentioned, or storylines that we might have missed from year to year on some of these teams and the dynamics that played out. So,
yeah, if we missed a team, you know, let us know. If you guys really think that Stanford team is better, that Auburn team, that Georgia team, let us know. And what years do we miss? There's obviously some really dominant years in the 90s and other dominant years in the early 2000s by some of those teams. But
yeah, especially when you're looking at dynasties that when teams put up multiple wins in the 4 or 5 year stretch, it can be difficult which one of those rosters was truly the best. And that's kind of what we had to go through with that Virginia situation. As you could pick any one of those teams realistically in isolation, but when you want to evaluate overall which one's the best team, you gotta find a way to do it. And I think we did land on the best team there. So
closing out here, I know we want to talk about moving forward the NCAA season. We are past the halfway point and we kind of want to give our predictions for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and there's a little discussion of some best NCAA teams of all time. We teased a little bit last weekend as I went on my little foreshadowing of the Texas men's team leading into March for this season. I think we just wanted to go overall and just give our predictions for how this year is going to shake out on both men's and women's now that we have reached this mid-season point of the year. So we'll give another rendition of the old, put ourselves out there and put some predictions on the table. Des, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, let's start off on the men's side here. I believe that Texas is going to win. I don't really think that is really a debate anymore. Just very dominating, and I think the toss-up is going to be a toss-up between 2 and 3, and I think it's going to come down to 3 different teams, but right now I think IU, with some of their additions that they got earlier this year and just the depth pieces that they have, I think that between them and Florida and NC State, it's going to come down to that second and third spot. But I think right now I have IU at second and Florida at third, and then I have NC State closely after in that fourth spot.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got, Casey?
Yeah, I'll go run through my men's, and so I'll take it on the chin and admit what I did in the fall here. My first episode of the DFL Swimming Podcast, I predicted Texas first, Florida second, and NC State third. And truth be told, I actually still am feeling pretty darn good about these predictions. Mm-hmm. Maybe not so much on the women's side. I still like Texas on top, and I truthfully do like Florida in second, although midseason maybe made me falter a little bit about that. Now the third spot is really where I struggle, and Don't get me wrong. I still do like this NC State team a lot. I think Cal definitely impressed at midseason.
Mm-hmm.
Proved that they're going to be able to salvage something from this season. Show up at NC is more than likely. I also think that there needs to be just some discussion about this ASU team.
Mm-hmm.
And we have talked a lot about whether or not they're going to be able to continue this run that they've had through the whole season. And realistically, I think they absolutely will. And they potentially could jump into that two spot for me. And that's something I'm watching, but they need to be in my top three, and they'll slot into that third spot for me right now. The ASU Sun Devils in the third spot.
That's probably something that I just missed over just now. I remember beginning of the year, I think I had similar. I had Texas, Florida, and then Tennessee. As good as Tennessee has been this year, I don't quite think they're going to scratch that top five. And rounding out the top five is probably going to be, it's probably going to be Texas, Florida, IU, ASU, and NC State are probably looking to be your top five teams. And kind of how that order goes after Texas winning is kind of up in the air, I think.
Yep.
It'll be really, really cool to see kind of what these teams do back half, what they do at conference championship meets, and then beyond. Switching to the women's side, what do you got?
Women's. Looking at this meet, let me pull up my early fall predictions. I had Stanford, UVA, Texas coming in third.
Mm-hmm.
And I was catching some flack from Dez putting Stanford first. And I really liked the call early on. I think the UVA team was a little bit unproven early on in the season. There were maybe some questions about how some of the transfers would shake out, the freshmen, sophomores would progress this season. And after I've seen this year play out a little bit more, I think I have to switch things up and put UVA back up on top. I think just this team has really impressed me in how they've just found a way, especially with losing some of the biggest names that they had last year, just slot in new swimmers and just keep the ball rolling. I think in the second spot, I'm going to take Stanford still, and I'll wrap it up with Michigan for me, actually going to top Texas and finish on the podium of end season. I think that could be a really close battle, and Texas is still, honestly, who knows what they're going to do, especially with the momentum they're carrying on the men's side. Who knows, maybe they'll be even better than I'm expecting them to, but I'm going to take Michigan, who's off to a really hot start this year, in the third spot. What do you got, Des?
Yeah, I believe I had UVA, Stanford, and Texas in the fall. I'm going to stick with that. I will agree with you there. I think Michigan is going to be pushing for that third place spot between them and Texas. I just still think Texas has the edge a little bit. But you've mentioned before that Texas men's team might go down as one of the best of all time. And my hot take is this UVA women's team will be right there with the past 5 years. Do they have Gretchen Walsh, Alex Walsh? No. But their depth right now is ridiculous. They have three girls, 335 or faster in the 500, a fourth fast in 440. They have two girls that have been 140 point, and another third girl who's been 141 in the 200 freestyle. They have three girls who have been 21-1 or faster in the 50 freestyle. I just think this is going to be a team where we're going to see 24 A finalists again, and we're going to see a lot of relay wins. And I just think that this depth is really going to show. Sarah Curtis has kind of almost slotted in for Gretchen Walsh. She's been 21-0 in the 50 freestyle already. I don't know. I think this UVA team is just another reload from previous years.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a tough one to get past, especially after the results that we've seen. You start adding up the projected number of A finals, and it looks like the UVA recipe all over again. Get the 24-25 A finals and take the trophy home on the plane.
Yep. Sounds about right.
But we'll see. It's a long season, and anything could happen. So we'll see. Like we talked about, we got some midseason transfers coming in here at the semester break, and
yep,
who knows how that plays out. So I think there will be some potential revisions moving forward as we begin to, you know, start building this, the preparation for championship season. And I think we'll all probably be proven wrong come March in some way.
Absolutely. So, that's
good stuff.
Let us know where we missed, where we could be better, what your predictions are for the NCAA landscape, how it shapes out.
Yeah. And as always, thanks for tuning in, and we're going to catch you in the next one. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.